Okay, background. Let's address the question that was asked. How in the world can you make such a prohibition on humanity that they shouldn't desire things?
It goes against human nature.
It goes against human nature. And you could prohibit someone from doing an action. That I understand. You tell me not to turn the light on or off. So that's something within my control. How can you tell me not to want something? Number five. The mitzvah of lo sisaveh, you shall not desire, includes a desire that remains in our hearts. You may wonder, how can a person be expected to restrain himself from desiring good things that his friend has while he's empty-handed? I shouldn't dream of that big mansion. Why not? How could you stop me? It's possible for a person to control their desires and to turn one's heart in whichever way a person desires. And before we even go to quote number two, the second of the section, that's the answer. The answer is you do have control. And we have to exercise that control to learn that that talent is within our means. There's a beautiful story Rabbi A.J. Twersky has in one of his books of a young man that was complaining that he keeps having immoral thoughts during davening. So he comes to his Rebbe and says, what am I supposed to do? So his Rebbe says, I want you to go to a certain inn in town, and I want you to go there at 9:30 at night, and I want you to knock on the door. They should let you in. So he goes to this inn, 9:30 at night, and he knocks. The doors are all bolted and shut, and no one answers him. And he pounds, and they finally come to the door, and they tell him that the inn is closed by 9 o'clock, and for security reasons, we don't let anyone in, we don't let anyone out, there's no such thing. He goes home, and he goes to his Rebbe. He's very confused, doesn't understand. You purposely sent me to this inn after 9:30? Purposely, I should make a fool of myself. So Rebbe said, no, not to make a fool of yourself. I wanted to make it clear to you that if you own a house, then you decide who comes in and when they're allowed to come in. And if you own your mind, then you decide what comes in and what doesn't come in. That's quote number five. Believe it or not, you have control of what you think and what you do. Now, the first instant you notice the diamond, maybe the first instant you may have like, wouldn't it be nice if... Oh, the Torah doesn't let me look at the world like that. Okay, so I won't. That's what we're saying. I'm not saying that the sentence won't start. Here's an opportunity for a violation, and I choose not to do it. I'm not saying that it won't be entertained, but once it's entertained, you have, according to quote number five, you have the ability to push it away. We do have control of our minds. Number six is very helpful. How can it be that a person shouldn't desire beautiful things that are owned by another person? And he answers, because it wasn't meant for you, and God runs the world. No, an intelligent person of a small town doesn't hope to marry the princess. An intelligent person has to realize that a beautiful woman or money will not become his unless Hashem wants it to be his. And that becomes a way to look at the world. That's the mitzvah we discussed a few weeks ago, the mitzvah of bitachon, trusting Hashem, knowing that Hashem runs the world. There's no reason for me to want something that clearly wasn't meant for me. How do I know it's not meant for me? I have a much greater proof than the small townsperson and the princess example. Much greater proof than that. The proof is, it belongs to someone else. The princess is already married. So she's clearly not for me. And that, quote number six, would be the perspective that we have to train ourselves in. If it is someone else's, then it's not mine. And it wasn't meant to be. Now, in order to save you some phone calls of questions as the cases crop up, let's look at the guidelines. Number seven. Instead, a person has the right to think, may Hashem provide me with this type of item. You have a right to see someone else's front yard adorned with flowers and say, I wish I could also have a nice front lawn. But you can't have his front lawn. Okay? He continues and he says, it depends how you apply this. Although this too is empty and poor of spirit, because a person should yearn for wisdom, understanding, good character traits, a little ethics thrown in there for good measure, but you're allowed to look at someone else's nice car and say, I wish I could buy one too, but not his. Not allowed to take away from somebody else. I had an interesting case that came my way of someone who described that they would like to date a student from a certain yeshiva. And I said, huh? How do you know? Like, what? And they told me, because she sees that her friends are getting married to people from this yeshiva, and apparently it's the same school of thought. And she's hoping that the way these young men were raised and trained and their school of thought, she'll find someone for herself also in that way of thinking. That's fine. She's not trying to take away someone else's chosen. She just sees the pattern and she's figuring, our example before, that engineering might be good for me too. So that's fine. Yeah.
I'm assuming this mitzvah doesn't apply to, say, athletic competition. You know, to Jews running a 100-meter dash and I want to win, but I'm going to take the win from my fellow Jew.
You're not taking his win because it's not his. The same way that you're allowed to bid at an auction against someone else. It's not his. Okay. I'm not coveting his item. If he wins the auction, and then I walk over to him and start haggling with him, offering him a better price, that suddenly I realized, you know, it really is worth going up another 100 and another 1,000 for the item, that might be a problem. Because during the auction, that was the dynamic. I'll offer you a bigger price as an incentive. But once it's his, offering him a bigger price and then convincing him and pressuring him or whatever, that could be a violation.
So if last year he was a world champion, he has this title, he carries into the next year, well, but I'm winning, I'm going to take this title away from you.
Yeah, that's an expression, but
it's
open
but
game.
Still an open, okay.
It's open to you, it's open to the next guy. It's not his because of last year's. Right. He has 2005
all the bets are off,
endorsement.
Right, you know, this year
the 2006 has yet to be awarded. It's a different product. Number eight. Although from an ethical standpoint, a person should not desire another person's things at all, one is not in violation unless he plans and decides to acquire it. So again, if a person is eaten up with jealousy, I wish I could have such a beautiful kitchen. I wish I could have such a beautiful home. I wish I could have his bike. Even the more blatant cases are not violations of this prohibition until the guy starts contemplating how he's going to get it from the other guy. Until then, he is unfortunately eaten up with jealousy. But that's not the violation, the technical violation that we're describing. Number 9 is actually a little funny. If a person doesn't pressure the owner into selling and decides that if the owner doesn't want to sell, he will not continue to desire it, he is permitted to ask if the item is for sale. And that was my lawnmower case. Mm-hmm. You see a lawnmower that's sitting there, it's not being used, I decide I'm offering a price, if they turn it down, I'm fine with it. Then there was no violation of lo sachmod, not to covet. What's funny about it is, you have to pay attention to your case. Picture walking over to somebody and saying, I don't mean to pressure you or anything, but is your house for sale? I'd like to offer you $500,000 for your house, and it really would be very convenient for me, because, and you go on and on. But if you say no, I'm fully willing to withdraw my offer. Okay? His car. You walk over to him. That's a very nice car you have. I see you've rebuilt the engine. Mechanic seems to have done a very nice job, very smooth running. In fact, I borrowed it last week to go to the store, and, you know, really nice car. I was willing to, interested in buying it. I'll give you a premium price. If you don't want, I have no problems, but it is something that I would like, and I'd like to make you an offer. But if you say no, I'll withdraw the offer without a problem.
Okay. Crossing the line.
Okay. We're getting a little queasy about these cases, but we're not quite sure if the guy is in total violation yet or not.
Sounds like a typical salesman.
Let's say he walks over and says, I really like your wife, and I'm willing to give you a presentable sum if you would divorce her. But if you don't want, I'm fully willing to withdraw my offer. Right? You could see that number 9 could be abused. You're not pressuring the owner into selling. You're fully willing to withdraw your offer, but you're just offering because maybe it's for sale. That applies to the lawnmower case. Could it apply to the house? Maybe. There's such a thing as asking around, is anybody interested in selling for the right price? You send letters to people on a block. Not in a way of pressuring them, but only pressuring the guy on 21, whatever that name of the street was. But you send the letter to everybody in the neighborhood. We're looking for a house in this neighborhood for $500,000. We're willing to pay. It's $100,000 more than anyone's paying for anything in the area. That's not pressuring. The car? I don't know that he was willing to sell. It depends how you phrase it.
You can ask.
Maybe you could ask. Maybe. You're prepared to withdraw the offer if he doesn't really want. The wife?
The wife isn't for sale.
The asking is already the pressure.
It's
ridiculous. Good.
We constantly get postcards from realtors.
Uh-huh.
Letters. I would say weekly. They're not Jewish, but if it were a Jewish realtor, that would be a problem.
I don't think there's a problem, because it's very clear that they're not pressuring you.
Just you.
They're trying to say that if you want to sell, I would like the business, but I'm sending it to every person on the block. I'm not interested in you selling. I'm interested in getting business, that whoever's selling their house should come to me.
No, but the fact that it's so frequent is not a problem.
You tell me, do you feel pressured to sell your house, or you feel antagonized that if I was selling your house, you're insisting that I should come to you? Do you feel any less comfortable in Marlton because they sent you this postcard?
It's just another piece of junk mail.
It's
an annoyance.
Yeah,
I think it's a solicitation for business.
Yeah, right.
I don't think it's a pressure to take your house away from you. I could see it getting the person flustered, but if we spend the time to think what they did and what they didn't do, they're certainly not coveting it for themselves. That's clear. and they have no agenda on your house versus the next house, even though yours is prettier. Number 10, we alluded to this already. If one person knows a wisdom or skill, another person wants to acquire it from him and does so. He pays him premium price, the guy takes off 2 weeks from his work, trains this other guy in whatever skill it is, it's not a violation. The mitzvah only applies in cases where the second person takes it and the first person is left without it. But if your coveting is in order to multiply the knowledge, to get more, that's not a violation.